Good morning.
Good morning. Grab my water bottle. Oh, thank you. Just for later. Oh, it's lovely to be here and have an opportunity just to open the Bible and look at some of our next installment, really, as we're going through this series on the blessings. But before I start, there's something that Emma and I have come to the recent realization at home that we aren't very good with houseplants or any plants, really. I'm just saying the truth, Em. That's the situation. Whatever we seem to do, we just can't seem to help these plants stay alive. Does anyone else have a problem with keeping houseplants alive? A couple of hands. Thank you for being honest. Some more hands. Lovely. You know, and I don't know what it is. So we either drown them or they go through a drought where they don't get enough water. They're either, because we live in a flat, they're either too close to a window and therefore they get too much intense light, or they don't get enough light, and then sometimes they end up with these brown spots on them. I don't know what that's about. And the list can go on as to kind of, you know, whether they're not hot enough or they're too cold as kind of being looked after. And it's a real shame because for us, we don't have a garden, so we live in a flat, don't have a garden. We're kind of privileged in our flat that we're surrounded by three, kind of all sides of us, surrounded by a little woodland. So there's a benefit of like almost feeling like you've got a nice garden that you can kind of see the outside, but don't actually have our own sort of space. Probably a good thing, obviously, because we can't keep anything alive. But we found over these last couple of years, I guess for a lot of us, that there's just a real boost to kind of having a bit of greenery inside, you know, when especially for us, where over the last 2 years of COVID, our home space has become our work space, has become kind of our chill out space, potentially our exercise space, has kind of had to kind of do multiple things. And there is some evidence to suggest, obviously, that plant life gives mood boosting benefits. And so the problem is that we just can't keep them alive. And that's a struggle that we have. And what's the alternative? Well, the alternative is that, as I was part of this research, that it's the rise of artificial flowers, the rise of the, you know, people using artificial flowers. And there's an article in The Guardian last October titled "Tacky or Trendy?" Let that just hang in the air. "Fake flowers are blooming all over the country." And it looked at the increasing alternative, this rise of fake artificial flowers being utilised. And in the article, a spokesperson for Tesco said, we've seen nearly a threefold increase year on year of the sales of artificial flowers, the increase in the sales of artificial flowers. And aside from us, with an inability to keep them alive, there are other sort of supposedly benefits to artificial flowers. That is, they are low maintenance, because they don't need anything, essentially, you know. And although we've probably all heard stories of different people with artificial flowers who maybe house sat or something like that, have then continued to water the flowers and wonder why they don't seem to be, why this water seems to be pouring out everywhere around them. You know, they're available all year round. They're always in bloom. Whatever you purchase, they're always there. They're long lasting, not so great historically for the environment, but traditionally they won't die on us. And they're cost effective, especially, like I said, for us who seem to would buy flowers that die. You don't have to buy so many flowers that you're kind of sentencing to death when you kind of purchase them. And they look great on the outside. But the problem is with fake flowers, artificial flowers, is that there are a lot of those things because they're not alive, right? They're not alive. They are just wonderful and they look perfect and pristine and great on the outside, but they are not alive. It is artificial. And the thing for us as we continue in this series of the blessings of Jesus, looking at the Beatitude, Jesus wants you to be real, wants you to be authentic, wants you to be full of life, not an image of it, not a reflection of it, but the real thing. And so today we're looking at the blessing, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God," in Matthew 5, verse 8. And we've been continuing over this last few weeks looking at the blessings of Jesus, and we're up to this one. And the scene is that there's a crowd on the hillside, the mountainside, that have come to gather to listen to Jesus, and Jesus continues after this outline, looking at multiple different areas of what he's sharing. And he's kind of outlining, as Guy shared last week, his manifesto, you know, his kind of like what his kingdom values are. And always great questions to be asking us, you know, ourselves is, well, what does Jesus mean by this? What is he saying? What's he trying to communicate? And, you know, you can think about those first five, six that we've seen so far, like line by line, thinking that we can nod away, thinking actually there's a lot of good values in there that we think that makes sense. Talking about last week, merciful, you know, having mercy, talking about striving for righteousness, you know, looking at being a people that comfort those who mourn, be a people who have a recognition of I guess, the poor in spirit, recognizing where we are in relation to God. And we can sort of have a sense of, yeah, all these make sense. All these make sense. And I feel this one kind of leads to a bit of a gear change from Jesus, where he sort of just steps it up a little bit for this people group that are there listening, where he's saying, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And like any deal, because it kind of feels, I don't know about you, but it kind of feels all these beatitudes, it kind of feels a little bit like these blessings, like a bit of deals, really. On the one hand, you've kind of got what's being outlined, and then what the benefit is. And you kind of think, well, what is the benefit? What's the perk? What's the reward that we see under this one? And the benefit is that you will see God. It doesn't say you might see God. It doesn't say you potentially could, should, whatever. Jesus says, you will. He says there's a certainty about the word will. You will see God. You will see the maker, the creator, the one who separated the sky from the land, who hung the stars in the sky. You know, and they talk about how many thousands and hundreds of stars there are to every grain of sand. And he's the one who hung them in the sky. And he's the one that you will see. And we've been doing on a Thursday night the Alpha course with some of our young people. It's been really nice just to kind of go through it together, see how they're doing, see where they're at with their faith. And Matt and Lucy at the family meeting have a chance to share a little bit about the Alpha course that we've got coming up in April soon. And one of the first videos as part of the Alpha series poses the question, is there more to life than this? And the structure of it is very much that you kind of got a couple of hosts who are introducing the theme, and then you've got, as they're sort of outlining it, they'll throw up questions, like open questions to the group that you can then consider. And what they do before they kind of, in the youth version, encourage you to pause the video and chat it around together, before they do it, they pose this question out, and then they throw it around to people on the streets. So they go to different people on different streets in different locations, and they ask them almost like a 10-second answer, what do you think about this question? And one of the questions in this first episode, is there more to life than this, was, if there was a God, what would you ask them? If there was a God, what would you ask them? And not one person who was asked, because obviously it's not just where they just sort of we'll ask all the Christians around on the streets that we seem to find. They ask people from different walks of life, different views, different beliefs. But not one person didn't have an answer for, well, if there was a God, what would I ask? And everyone had a question. And so whether you're here for the first time, or you're here exploring what faith looks like, or whether you've been a Christian for a long time, we all have questions that we would hold to be like, if I was to encounter God, what would I ask them? And especially, we've spoken a lot about it this morning already, but some of those questions might be, why is what's happening in Ukraine happening right now? It's a real valid question to be like, God, why is what's going on happening right now? Why is have we gone through the last 2 years of COVID? You know, a bit of a gear change to the other spectrum. You know, why did you create a platypus? Like, what's the point of that? You know, beak and webbed feet, and you know, it's a mammal, yet it's weird. Why did you create that? Apologies to all platypuses listening, or platypus eye. I don't know what the platypi. I don't know what the. But everyone have a question, right? If there was a God, what would you ask? What would you ask if there was a God? And the thing is, that's you can do that. You can. There's a certainty that you can encounter God, you can see God, and you can ask God questions. And there's always the eligibility, you know, the terms, conditions. You see a fantastic offer, and you think, oh, I wonder if I qualify for that. What are the terms and conditions? And you have to read the fine print. am I eligible? And the eligibility criteria here is the pure in heart. That's the eligibility criteria. The pure in heart, they will see God. As listeners, we've got to be like, well, what does Jesus mean by pure? What does he mean by the heart? What does it mean in the way to understand and see God? And for us, there's real significance and real importance by some of these answers to these questions for us right now in the present. But there's also significance, greater significance for the life to come. You know, eternal significance about the answers to these questions. So what does Jesus mean by pure? So did you know that the purity of gold is measured in carats? It feels really bizarre to say as well. I can't just get the image of just orange carrots served up with your roast. That's kind of like, that's the measure for gold. But I'm sure I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. But the purity of gold is measured in carrots. And it ranges from 1 to 24. And whatever you have, a watch, a ring, necklace, whatever the jewelry is that you have, it is going to have a purity measure that sits on that bandwidth of 1 to 24. Whether it's 9 carat, 12, 14, etc., up to 24 carat gold, which is pure, without impurities. And in the UK, the 9 carat gold is the minimum standard of cartridge for something to be permitted to be called gold. So that minimum standard means that it is 9 parts pure gold made up with 15 parts impurity, 15 parts other metals, traditionally copper or silver, that makes up the rest of that value up to 24 carats. And I looked up on various different jewelers to see, you know, can I find a 24 carat gold, a pure gold ring? Could I find that? And I couldn't. I couldn't find. The closest thing I could find was 18 carat gold. So, and it was very expensive. So anyone who's interested in 18 carat golds. And it's 18 parts pure gold and 6 parts impurity, 6 parts different metals. So a ring that is 75% pure, 25% impure. And Jesus here that we see is he's outlining the minimum standard for eligibility to have that certainty to see God. Is one pure heart, one 24 carat gold heart that is free from impurities, free from other metals, that's 100% gold. This is the entry requirements, that's the eligibility, one entirely pure heart. And yet the Bible teaches us in Romans 3:23, it says, for all have done wrong. For all have made mistakes, have hurt people, have been selfish, have pursued our own selfish self-interest, selfishness, have passed judgment over different people. All of us have done that. And it says all have sinned and therefore have fallen short of the standard, of the glory, of the honor of God, a pure and holy God. And in the first week, we heard, or we were doing this, about the blessing, the relief of those who are starting their journey, for those who are described as poor in spirit, because there is an acceptance, there's a recognition of that gap, that chasm that exists between the holiness of God, the holiness of a pure God, and where we are. And to be a pure and holy people, that's the challenge that lies before us. And for me, one of the reasons why this is a bit of a gear shift moment in Jesus' teaching is because the bar just gets raised higher for people. And Jesus brings this reality over what purity looks like. It's, you know, just our dilemma over artificial versus real plants. Jesus' teaching is not about appearances. Purity is not defined solely by what you are seen to do or how you are seen to act out your life. Rather, it is about your heart. The Greek word they use there is cardia, the heart, the mind, the character, the inner self, the effective center of our being. That's what he means here in terms of your heart. And we often see, especially reading in the Gospels, Jesus coming into conflict with the Pharisees, so the religious teachers of the day, those like, you know, would almost be the equivalent of the preachers this morning who would be getting up to talk. You know, Jesus comes into conflict with them about their understanding, because they could be very judgmental and would judge the world based on the outside, based on the outward appearance of what individuals do as being a sign of how right they are before God or not. So whether they are people who would make grand displays of generosity and would make it clear the grand displays of their generosity, whether they would be people who would pray long, loud, articulate prayers that never end as a sign of like their sort of their righteousness before God, how good they are before God, or who would give greater time to God's work, be like, oh, I'm doing the food bank on a Monday, I'm doing this group on a Tuesday, I'm you know, helping out with something else on Wednesday, I'm going into the prisons, I'm going into the hospitals, I'm doing this, this, and this, all for God's glory, you know, be about what they would see that as being about what is on the outside, as a place of higher holiness with God. And Jesus turns this upside down. And you see in Matthew, later on in the Gospel of Matthew, in chapter 23 to 27, he's talking to them directly. He does a few different examples for them where he's criticizing them, where he's coming to them. He's saying, "Woe to you, you hypocrites," talking to these Pharisees. "So you are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean." So we're approaching Easter, and you kind of think that, you know, that scene of a tomb that's been carved into the hillside with the stone rolled across in front of it, Jesus describing that looks wonderful. It's whitewashed. Someone's got the jet sprayer all over that, and that looks fantastic. What, you know, your approach in terms of how you're seeing to honor God and all those things you're trying to do, that looks great, doesn't it? But what happens if we roll back that stone? What happens if we say, let's take a little peek behind the door? What happens if we ask you to drop the mask, drop the facade, drop what's in front there, and we roll that back? What we're going to find, Jesus is very critical there, describes him as full of dead bones. But he's referring to the view of the heart that is impure. So there's a heart here that's impure. And it doesn't matter how much energy or how bright we look on the outside or the time we commit to you know, putting our best faces on and, you know, how we prepare well. You know, God is concerned about what happens when we roll back the stone and see what's behind. You know, that sense of the Wizard of Oz. What's behind the curtain? What is behind the curtain? What does that look like? And you might think that you are 24 karat gold on the outside, but what does your heart look like? And after these blessings, Jesus continues his teaching to the people on the hillside, and it is where we kind of see some of this sort of challenge to us, where we go, "Oh, that feels uncomfortable, Jesus. I feel uncomfortable right now." Because in Matthew 5:21-22, it's almost 10 verses later, he has said, "You have heard it said, you have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,' and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment." We found those moments of being like, "Yeah, I haven't murdered anyone," but in your head, being like, "Oh, I could wring your neck, couldn't I, if you'd done something, you know?" And been really stirred to kind of think, "Oh, really frustrating." And I've got an example that I'll share a bit later on. It continues a couple of verses later. "You've heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman or man with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her or him in his heart." Have you ever found yourself just lusting after someone else? They look nice. Get yourself caught up in a fantasy over that. Jesus is saying that's the rolling back on what's in the heart. There's a seriousness there. He's saying it's basically the same. The standard is higher. In Matthew 6:16-18, "And when you fast," so you know, where we come before God trying to be to seek him in prayer by giving up something. He says, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces that their fasting may be seen by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, that your fasting may not be seen by others, but that your by your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Have you ever fished for praise or admiration or affirmation from someone over something that's intended to be a humble act of, you know, I think I do this all the time, probably at home. Do you know, I've just emptied the dishwasher, Em. Do you know, see all the washing that's been hung up, you know. Just seeking affirmation, seeking praise for something, rather than just, you know, I'm just here to serve or here to help or whatever it might be. And so Jesus is turning our understanding of purity upside down, and that the matters of the heart have significance, because from the heart, everything flows. If there is pollution in a stretch of river that is affecting wildlife, the authorities will come in and will test the quality of the water at different points to try and understand where is it that the source of this is coming, that's being flowed downstream, or wherever that might be, that's having an impact on the wildlife. And for us, the source of the impurity, the source of our pollution, is in our hearts, this sense of our inner being. And it will flow into every area of our lives. And we might do our best to stop it, to fix it, try our hardest. And for a while we might do that. But after time, it'll just surface. It'll come to the surface, and we can't fix it on our own. I recently tried to fix one of our plants that was on the way out, it felt like. It was at death's door. I tried to think, I can fix this. Bring it back from the brink of death. It was just really struggling. So I thought, I'm going to repot it. That's my first test. I'm going to put some good soil in there. I feel like that's a sensible thing to do. I'm going to put some good soil in it. So I had to sort of take out the pot, scatter it off. I don't think we'd ever done it. So it's kind of probably years old, and just thinking like it was, please don't judge us. and a lot of its branches had lost structure and strength, and so they're just flopping all over the place. And so I had an idea that I was going to make a splint for it, and I had a first go at that, and we won't talk about that. But the second one, I thought, this is genius. And it was just soon around Christmas time, and so I had one of those like mini cheddar pots, you know, like those sort of the Christmas festive ones that they kind of get you. That's kind of like quite a nice little cylinder shape. So it's like perfect. So it's a bit of arts and craft. I cut the bottom off it. I cut down the middle of it, and I unfolded. And I thought this will work perfectly. And stretched it around it, and thought it'll prop up all the plant stems, and it'll give it strength. Tim, you are a genius. Great thinking. Get a podcast going. How to save trees. So I put it in, and I leave it for a little while, and I'm there, gently, delicately watering it, almost like, you know, this vision of just nursing it back to life, step by step, and it just made no difference whatsoever. Just absolutely made no difference, and it probably could really do with a chance of just being, I guess, in some ways, a lot of this stuff lopped off. You know, that sort of pruning to restart again, but that just feels unfair to it. But that's probably where we're at. But the thing is, for us, we can try to put splints in our lives. We can try to put things in place that we think, Tim, you've got a great idea. You know you struggle here. You know this is the thing. What we're going to do is we're going to put this splint in place. We're going to get the old plaster out, the duct tape. If anything needs to be stuck together, use duct tape. Apparently engineers love that. It's the best thing. And we'll put a splint, you know, we might put a splint in place, and it may work for a time. But soon, it will struggle. Because we're not dealing with the source, we're dealing with the symptoms, I suppose, of what we're seeing. But the good news is there is hope. There's always hope. It's why we gather here on Sunday mornings, because there is hope. And the hope is that we see in Ezekiel, so in the Old Testament, God speaking to his people in Ezekiel 36. He says, I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols, the things that we chase after, things that we put in the place of honor. And I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. And I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees. And be careful to keep my laws. Then you will live in the land I gave your ancestors. You will be my people and I will be your God. And I will save you from all your uncleanness. God in his mercy, and it is in his mercy, knows our struggles. He knows our limitations. He knows of our impurities. He knows of the things that we struggle with and that we just can't deal with on our own, this inability to become, you know, pure 24 karat gold on our own. And so he makes a way. He makes a way. That's why we're what we believe. And he makes a way that we might be sprinkled clean. And not just that, that we might have the benefit of being cleaned on the outside. So get the jet spray out, get that sort of, you know, whitewashed tomb look going, but also on the inside. And we see this, as we've been seeing a lot this morning, at the cross. We see this at the cross where there's this exchange offered by Jesus. And he offers the gift of his heart, you know, his pure 24 karat gold life, free from impurities, free from the things, free from the struggles, free from wrongdoing, a life that meets that standard of God. But it's a part exchange. You know, it's a part exchange. Like when you transfer in your old car, it's not past its MOT, it's not going to pass its MOT. Your heart is not going to pass its MOT. You need Jesus' heart. And so he offers to take your old heart. He offers to take this heart of stone, as it's described there, that's immovable, unable to change. You know, battered heart that creaks, that's got scratches, that's got hurts, that's got pain, grime, dirt, impurities. And he offers to take that and in exchange give us a new heart. A heart that is described as a heart of flesh that can be moved. That's what the author of Ezekiel is saying, that hearing from God, that a heart that can be moved to honor God. Doesn't necessarily mean that we find it easy, but that can be moved. We say, I don't need to default into what it was like before. A heart that can be pure on the inside and can empower us through the Spirit to honor God and follow his will for our lives. But we are obviously continually being shaped and changed. And in the Philippians, we're running our race, where we're saying we'll be made more new, renewed to the day of his coming back. Because we all struggle still. Even if we're a Christian, we can still find ourselves struggling. And I found myself this just the other week, just last Saturday, actually. I was playing for Shepton Pumas, my football team. And we were playing an under-21s team. And they were basically kids. Do you know what I mean? They were really kids. And now I've just turned 30, and so I'm feeling a little bit old, and in football terms, obviously. And there's this kid who's just... There's just something really fast, and you just feel really unfit. And you kind of think, oh, I thought just... I was talking about just unfit. And so this kid gets injured. I shouldn't be so judgmental. Like, this opposition player gets injured. This kid. And he goes down off the side of the pitch. And within the framework of the game, if someone's injured and they're off the pitch, you can continue play. And so I'm shouting at the ref, not because of distance, okay? So just distance. And I'm shouting at the ref, ref, we can play on. He's off the pitch. We can play on. We can play on. And the ref is trying to deal with something else happening. And his mates are trying to be like, no, come on to the pitch. Come on to the pitch. Because obviously if he's on the pitch, then it has to slow down the game. And I'm obviously wanting this 11 versus 10 numerical advantage that we have. And he slowly manages to, and I don't know what the ref's doing. I'm like, come on, ref, just see this and address it. And he doesn't. And the kid manages to sneak himself back onto the pitch, like hobbling, to kind of then fall down again. And I don't mind gamesmanship, because I'm, you know, we all play the game. But I challenge him. This guy was like, oh, you were off the pitch. Get back off the pitch. And he lies to my face. He says, I wasn't off the pitch. And I was like, you're like 2 foot off the pitch. I don't think but it really irks me that, like, I could deal with the gamesmanship, but I just, you know, this is the lying to my face that kind of really just kind of like just stirs in me a real sense of well of frustration and anger, really. And this is the challenging part for me, is where I'm thinking in my head, like I've, as a defender, you usually like do like a mental note of like different players. You know, like I've locked in your face now, son. Locked your face in, and your number. And I can feel myself going, if you come back on the pitch later, I'll give you something to go back down about. You know, I'll give you something to go down about, son. And I remained worked up for the rest of the game and just really angry and frustrated by this. And in reality, the irony of it all is I end up getting injured myself and having to go off later on. it's really annoying. But I remember feeling quite convicted afterwards, where God was almost, you can kind of feel that sense of like the arm round to be like, what was all that about? You know, what was all that about, Tim? Like, we believe that we will all stand before God one day. We will all stand before God and we'll be judged, you know, according to our actions. And so him lying to my face, God's like, that will be, he'll be held accountable for his own actions. But Tim, my concern is like, what was going on for you in that moment? Because you don't have to indulge your frustration and your anger, and especially your anger to a point where you're premeditating a retaliation at this kid. That's not what I've saved you for. You know, that's not what you've been saved for. That is you indulging, you know, the sin that can still remain, that we face the challenge with. And Paul describes, you know, he talks in the Romans about that internal battle that he has, like knowing that he's been saved and knowing that he's in a new light, knowing he has a new heart, yet experiencing the internal war waging on his heart to kind of continue to be in some way straddling two camps, where he wants to be moved and wants to say, I want to honor you, God, of everything I do. Yet I find myself being held back by these thorns in my side that continue to impact on me. And it can be the same for, and it is the same for all of us, not can be, it is the same for all of us. For all of us who have been saved, we can all find those moments where we can find ourselves faced with the, do I indulge my past life that I've meant to have been put to death? I've meant to have, you know, we mourn and we celebrate the new life that we are in. As a church, you know, we want to be a community of believers, part of our vision, who want to love God, love one another, and do mission together. And so we want to be a people that pursues holiness in every area of our life, every area of our life together. Not just some areas, but every area of life. That's what we want to do. We want to pursue holiness together. And that's the challenge. You know, is that what you want to do? Do you want to pursue holiness in every area of your life? And the life that encounters the holiness of a holy and pure God in every area of your life is a life that chooses to not indulge in those things. It's a life that says, I want to just run after you, Lord, and not be caught by these impurities, by these things that can really impact on me. And so we can see this change in our hearts of values being replaced. You know, that Indiana Jones kind of scene with the monkey and the gold monkey and the sand, kind of like that. When we receive Jesus' brand new heart and we trade out our old one, we can experience the trading in of values, of, you know, of anger giving way to love and compassion, you know, of selfishness giving way to being selfless, giving way to generosity. We can see this transfer in if we want to accept it. Ezekiel was talking about allow ourselves to be moved by it, to honor God. And if we choose this, God promises that we will discover him and that we will see him clearly in the working of his hand over our lives in this present age. And in choosing Jesus' gift of forgiveness and exchange of hearts, we will, not might, we will experience the certainty of the promise that we will not die, but be raised to life, everlasting life with him. And we sang so well about, you know, that so many of the songs this morning just of the honor of who God is, and that we get the chance to see him in our everyday. And to help Emma and I, Emma's mum for Christmas, because she knows our struggles, right? Emma's mum for Christmas bought us this book, which is in pristine condition, which is not a great sign for our plants. But it's the Royal Horticultural Society Practical Houseplant Book. And on the back, the last sentence on the back of the blurb says this. It says, the RHS Practical Houseplant Book tells you all you need to know to create, cultivate, and care for your indoor garden. And Jesus creates the offer of a new heart. But this book, the Bible, this book, the living, breathing word of God, that is his wisdom, his knowledge, his encouragement, his challenge to us. And this people, the church, this community of believers who want to partner together in loving the poor, praying for the sick, you know, supporting the needy, sharing our faith with one another, alongside the spirit that sits and empowers us, will cultivate and care for us as we spur each other on to care for our inner gardens, what's behind the stone, you know, our inner hearts from where life flows. And so I'm going to draw to a close. We're just going to invite the worship team to come back up. And they're going to lead us in a further time of worship. I just want to encourage us to respond in a couple of different ways. So firstly, if you are struggling with some area of your life that continues to be a thorn in your side, and you may have put splints in place, you may have put, you know, your own steps, your own measures in place, but it doesn't matter what you seem to do, you just remain the fear, the sting of this thorn. I want to encourage you to come forward for prayer. And I'm going to promise you this, that if you desire, if you feel this sense of I want to come forward for prayer, you may find that you encounter a whisper in your heart, something along the lines of this. If you go forward for prayer, everyone is going to judge you, and because there must be something seriously wrong in your life that you're doing. So best not go forward, and we can deal with this separately. We can deal with this one-to-one in private. And I know you might experience that, because that's often what I experience in myself. That's often what I find. And I'm going to ask you to be brave, because that's a lie. That is a lie that we believe that the enemy would tell you, because you're not going to receive judgment. You're not going to receive those thoughts. What you're going to receive is you're going to receive love and care and compassion and understanding, because each of us here knows what it's like to struggle with different things. That's the reality. Each of us knows what it's like to struggle with different things. And it doesn't matter in a sense of whether you're here for the first time or you've been here for ages and you've been here for the years and you feel part of the furniture, we all go through times of struggle. And you know what's worse than struggling? Struggling alone. That's what's worse. So come forward and receive prayer. And we'll come to God together. And we say we'll carry each other's burdens, because we want to pursue holiness together. And you might also be thinking here, I would like to receive that new heart that we heard, that opportunity to part exchange my old heart, where the things I seem to just to unable to change or struggle with, and I want to receive the forgiveness of Jesus and experience that for myself. I want to encourage you to come forward for prayer as well, because so many of us in here have been in the position that you've been in and are with you, love you, and know that you're not alone, because you'll encounter the joy of God's presence, the joy of his love, because that is what we see here, where he says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. That's what they will do. They will encounter God. And so if you'd like prayer, I'm going to encourage you to come forward to the front. I know it can be a bit scary, but practically, it helps us as a team know who we can pray for, who's waiting for prayer perhaps, and how we can best serve you. So we'd love to encourage you to please feel free to come to the front, stand, sit, find space, and someone will come and pray for you, because we're a church family and there is absolutely no rush. So we're going to have a time of worship, we're going to respond, and if at any point during that time you want to just come and receive prayer, come forward and you'll be prayed for, because we're all in here together with you.